Second hour of the Power Hour, 8 minutes after. This is Joyce Riley. I do thank you for joining us today. We're going to reach into the unexplained again. Yes, we were talking earlier about 9/11 and the statements that were made about explosions, about what happened on 9/11 that maybe you hadn't heard before, including the president mentioning that there were explosions. Surprise, surprise. Well, we're going to be talking to Andrew Johnson today. He was on the program about a week and a half or a week ago, caused quite a stir discussing the findings that Dr. Judy Wood has been promoting, which is that something else happened besides thermite and the explosions that have been talked about by many people in the 9/11 truth community. Well, Andrew Johnson joins us today. He's an independent researcher who has, in his own articulate way, caused a lot of people to question what happened on 9/11 in a positive way. So I want to thank you very much for having done that and for joining us again today, Andrew Johnson from the UK. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much, Joyce, for inviting me back onto the program. I'm pleased to be able to sort of come and chat to you again.
You must have gotten a lot of feedback from having been on the program. I had 5 times more feedback from your show and Dr. Judy Wood than I've had on any issue ever on the Power Hour.
Right, yes. Well, I haven't had a huge lot of feedback myself. I did have a bit, but I think, you know, really, because we're challenging such a lot of people's, you know, assumptions, really, I suppose, that's what's causing a lot of the reaction. And I think really what I'd like to, you know, open with is a little quote from somebody called Don Marquis, and that's that if you think that, you know, if people think you make them think, then they'll love you. But if you really make them think, they'll hate you. And I think, really, that's what we've been experiencing. And I think, you know, again, just to open things a bit, I think it's worth pointing out that, you know, when Dr. Judy Wood came on last week, the way that she tries to sort of present things is to get people to think for themselves. And I think this is quite alien to a lot of people because, you know, we're so often given the conclusion and then expected to just believe it without really thinking about it. And I think if you're looking at something totally new, you know, you have to really observe it very carefully, a bit like when you're a child learning how to, you know, sort of work a piece of equipment and you press some buttons and it, you know, you think of these child's toys that you're pressing buttons with and they'll do various things and you don't really know what they are. And I think, you know, when you look at what happened at the World Trade Center, you really do have to come to it with fresh eyes, you know, and then start to sort of re-observe what actually happened. And unless and until you do that, you're not really going to get yourself on the road to truth. You know, so it's a question really of looking at the actual evidence and then moving forward from that point. And I think because, you know, people have made such a lot of assumptions and they've been given such a lot of answers already, or apparent answers. When somebody comes along and says, hang on a minute, that didn't happen, it wasn't like that, you know, just, you know, go back and look at it again. People have quite an adverse reaction to that and they don't really like doing that because they're settled in their, you know, conclusion and they feel that they're moving forward in a certain direction. And if you come along and say, well, you know, we're not really sure you're going in the right direction, they can turn around to you and say, oh, you're just an idiot. What do you know, you know?
Well, let me just add, and I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say it as in a nice way as I possibly can, but the presentation that Judy made could have been better. Now, Dr. Wood, in her own brilliance of what she knows and her information that she has collected, the presentation was a little bit hard to follow for some people. Now, well, I don't think the anger was against the fact that she was doing it, but it made it very difficult to get to what she was saying. And I talked with her about that.
Well, sure. You know, we discussed this a bit, actually, and I think that's really why I sort of tried to explain in the beginning just now, you know, why I think what that process is all about. And it's quite alien to a lot of people. And you know, you have to go through that process of discovery. And I think what Dr. Wood is trying to do is encourage people to do that. And I think, you know, when you've got the situation where somebody comes on the phone and says, oh, there was no such hurricane on 9/11, you know, and we had that sort of happening, that was quite strange to us because you can easily go and check that. And if you spend, you know, okay, we both realize, I mean, Dr. Wood and I both knew that there was more than one hurricane called Erin. But when you get somebody coming on and being quite, you know, quite kind of assertive about that, that kind of, I think, added to the difficulty with actually doing a clear presentation, because if you've got people sort of coming in halfway through and saying, oh, no, you know, that's not true, you know, then people are easily confused and it adds to the mix of sort of negativity and all this sort of thing.
I can agree with that. I can agree with that. And I also want to add that I am a Ketam whistleblower. I have been through the hellacious 13 years in a lawsuit that drug on and on and on that will tear you apart from the inside out, believe me. I've also come out with, when in 1994 when I started talking about 9/11, about the Gulf War illness and why it happened and the government was at fault, I went through the same kind of thing. But when I would go on the air and if somebody would say, oh, you know, they would come at me and say, oh, you're not even a nurse. You were never even in the military. But those things are said sometimes by some people just to create and find out how you're going to respond. And I learned that it was my response. And I would say simply, if they would say something that ridiculous, like you were never in the military, well, I suggest you check my military records then and you can find them at such and such, rather than becoming defensive over the issue. Mm. But be that as it may, let's back up and go to the issue of 9/11. Now, checktheevidence.com is an outstanding website. Checktheevidence.com. Let's talk about what happened on 9/11, you believe, because we're going to talk to John Hutchison, and I'm going to ask you to also, a little bit later, tell us why he's going to be coming after you. But let's go back to 9/11 and see if everybody can remove everything they've ever heard about 9/11 from their minds and be willing to introduce some new information.
Right. Yes, well, you know, I think, again, you know, as I started, you have to go back and look at the evidence, and this is why Dr. G. Wood's site is so valuable. I mean, you know, I have to say, really, that probably 98% of the stuff on my website about 9/11 is really derived from Dr. Wood's research, so it wouldn't really exist without her having laid the groundwork, you know, so I think that's probably worth pointing out initially. And I think, you know, as I briefly described in the last program, I was taken in by this story of bombs in the building, you know, and thermite and all of this sort of thing. You know, and I have to be honest and say that, for example, I've actually met William Rodriguez, you know, the janitor in the World Trade Center, and he stayed in my house because he did a UK tour to tell his story in February 2007. So, you know, I've met these people, I've spoken with them, I've listened carefully to their stories. But then when I found out what Dr. Wood had sort of basically put out there, and she'd focused on some very basic fundamental things that you don't need to go into, you know, looking at CIA plans or looking at, you know, PNAC documents and all this type of thing, which is all very interesting. And, you know, really was beginning to lift 9/11 for me out of a political paradigm and into more kind of, you know, like a petri dish, you know, looking at what's actually there in the petri dish and saying, oh, you know, is this black or is it white? Is it grey? Is it yellow? What's actually there? And the key point is really what happened to the towers. And as Dr. Wood points out, and it's often misreported, the towers did not collapse. That's the key thing. We hear this word, and I mentioned this in the talk that I give about this, collapse, 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 the towers collapse. And this report's called The Collapse of the World Trade Center Towers, you know, and all the news reports say, oh, when the towers collapsed, you know, everyone went running, that was, you know, and on and on. But when you go back and look at the actual, you know, photographic record and you look at the pictures, then you see the towers indeed didn't collapse. And I thought, oh, that's amazing, because I've been repeating this word collapse for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And when I look at these pictures here, that never happened. They didn't collapse. They turned to dust. And, of course, when you present people with that issue, that, you know, people have said to me, oh, that's just ridiculous. Of course they collapsed. And I'll say, no, go and look at the pictures again. And you're constantly fighting this sort of conclusion that people have been given, and you have to reopen their eyes again. And then you know, look into it a little bit further, and you come across this thing that we call the spire, which is this 70 stories of unsupported steel, right? And you can go and look at this on the videos as we did with this TV program we did about a month ago or so, a bit longer than that now. And you can see this steel actually turning to dust in about 10 seconds. And that, when you look at that and you see it, that evidence must be answered. That's really why you've got to look at that and make sure that you understand what's going on. And this is Dr. Wood's point about, you know, what happened, establish what happened, and then you can move forwards. You know, if you go and look at a dead body and somebody says, oh, you know, they were shot, and then you look at it more closely and you say, no, they weren't shot, somebody fired an arrow at them, then when you go off and do the investigation, instead of looking for somebody with a gun, you're going to go and look somebody with a bow and arrow. So this is the point about what is, you know, establishing what happened. If you don't establish what happened, you don't know where to look next. And that's the basis of a forensic investigation. So, you know, when I started doing that, I realized that she was right. And I, you know, followed the evidence that she had laid out. And then we, you know, sort of moved forward from there, and she moved forward from there. And by the time I'd sort of caught up with her, she'd already put on the table the evidence for directed energy weapons, which is simply this: energy which is directed and used as a weapon. You know, we don't have to go into all the lasers and masers and plasmoids that other people have tried to muddle together with it. We don't do that initially because we have to establish the evidence as, you know, what would point to those things.
Okay, when we come back, I'm going to ask you very quickly to give us the three reasons, the three most compelling reasons of Judy Wood's evidence that you believe prove something else happened. After this four-minute break, this is Joyce Riley, my guest, Andrew Johnson. Stay tuned. 24 minutes after the hour, you are joining the second hour of the Power Hour today. If you don't get it in your local area, go call your radio station, the program manager and program director, and say, I want the Power Hour. I need the Power Hour. And I do thank you all for joining us today. We have Andrew Johnson joining us from the UK. He has worked closely. Well, he has been researching independently what happened on 9/11. He believed the conventional story that we all believed, which was, gee, the buildings came down because of an explosion. And then he heard some other evidence and he started to question the prevailing concept. Now, at least we're not back and believing the story of 19 guys from who knows where did it and why they did it. That's not the story, obviously. So if you're tuning in and you are convinced that it happened with 19 hijackers from Saudi Arabia, well, this probably is not the program for you. This is the advanced course we're taking today on 9/11. And joining us, like I said, is Andrew Johnson. Andrew, what was it, what three points that Dr. Judy Wood made or her evidence that made you say, something else happened, I'm convinced of it?
Sure, yeah. Well, I think what I'll do is, before I answer that question, I'll just mention that Dr. Wood has highlighted about 40 or 41 points of evidence which need to be explained, and they're listed on her website on the /WTC page. But the three really that I, you know, found most compelling, probably, if I were to pick three, and it's quite tricky to pick them out of so many, but I'd say the towers turning to dust, and very simple things like, are the towers there or not? You know, so basically the towers turn to dust. And when you look at that, you're then opening up to a new process which you've not seen before. One of the really curious things that she discovered in the photographic record was the upturned cars that are upside down. We've got at least five pictures of cars which are inverted, in some cases next to cars that are not inverted, and they're in a position where the leaves are all on the trees behind them. So if you say it was some type of gust of wind, this doesn't really make sense. Another of the very intriguing pictures that she's got is evidence, ones where we have evidence of heat and no heat in the, you know, within inches of each other. A particular car that I'm thinking of, which was, I think, on FDR Drive, about half a mile away from the World Trade Center, shows the, you know, doors all wilted on one side of the car, and then about 2 feet away, you have an inflated rubber tire. So in other words, when they're wilting, you know, that looks like the result of very high heat, very intense heat, and the paintwork appears to be all charred. But then just a couple of feet away, we've got an inflated tire. And it's not just one car that's like that. There's 1,400 of these cars, which exhibit a similar piece of damage. So, you know, when you're faced with things like that, you're really looking at a new phenomenon. And it can't be explained by planes and hijackers. It can't be explained by thermite. It can't be explained by bombs in the building. So you're looking at something new. And that's going back to what I said initially, this something new, that's when you have to start thinking, now I'm going to have to be really careful here in making any assumptions. and I've got to adopt, you know, the maximum objectivity. In other words, making the minimum amount of assumptions and just observing what's there. You know, and Dr. Wood says, you know, if you don't know what happened, you keep looking at the evidence that you've got until you do know what happened. And if you find that you're running out of evidence, you go and look for some more, which is what she's been doing, and she's still doing it. So, you know, you keep on gathering the evidence to find out what happened. So those are the three things, really.
Okay, now let me ask you the question. Have you completely discounted the fact that it may be possible that there was explosions plus the free energy or the directed energy weapon?
Well, the way I describe it is like this. You cannot prove that there were no bombs in the building. The point being that the buildings are no longer there, and we don't know what happened to all the, you know, what did remain. We don't know. Most of it blew away in the wind. There are a few girders left over, which have been stored by a company by WJE, I believe. NIST knows all about that. So you can't actually disprove that bombs weren't used. However, if you look at the directed energy weapon scenario and the way that we now understand that that worked, because, you know, Dr. Wood has identified the basic sort of technology behind the weapon. It might not be the exact same thing, but this is why we bring in the Hudson effect, because it seems to be something similar to that. One of the characteristics that we see is that metal has effects, you know, done to it by this weaponry over a period of time. The metal weakens and it can turn to dust, as we saw. That's actually what happened. So if you've got the structure of metal being changed, you know, in real time, as it were, by this technology, then if some of these, you know, this metal is in the surrounding of a fire extinguisher, for example, then as that metal becomes degraded or starts to disintegrate or starts to turn to dust, then at some point that pressurized tank is going to explode. Now, if you put an egg in a microwave oven and switch it on, what will happen?
Oh, it'll explode. Okay, we've got a 3-minute break. We're going to be back with our guest today, Andrew Johnson. This is Joyce Riley. Stay tuned. 29 minutes after the hour. Welcome back to Power Hours, 33 minutes after the hour. This is Joyce Riley. I thank you for joining us today and spending your time with us. I also thank you for voting with your dollars, purchasing from thepowermall.com. We've got a raw food special on. Oh, man, we got lots of raw food, raw cashews, raw peanuts, raw Incan berries, raw goji berries. It's all on special at the Power Hour, including the raw chocolate sauce for ice cream or whatever you use it on. It is unbelievable. It's raw cacao with agave. And believe me, we do not carry the bad agave. We carry good agave at the Power Hour, organic agave. And it has no fat grams in it, if you can imagine that. And it's better than any fudge sauce you will ever, ever use. It's on special at the Power Hour. The Elderberry Special continues. Living Streams Probiotics and the probiotics for your garden, along with the Spice Special. And remember, Kirkman's going up to $39.95 a bottle. I am sorry to see it, but we didn't get any warning either, so I do apologize to you. It is $39.95 now, so when it goes on special, that'll be the time to get it for those of you who are using Kirkman and understanding and appreciating that. If you don't know what curcumin is, look at MD Anderson Cancer Center and the studies done with curcumin. You will be astounded. C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N. Curcumin. C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N. Stuff we can't talk about. FDA won't allow us to talk about it, but you can just do a search engine, start page or search engine at MD Anderson Cancer Center and curcumin. You will be pleasantly surprised. We're talking to Andrew Johnson today. The subject is 9/11. What really happened? I don't have a dog in this fight, ladies and gentlemen. I don't care. I don't care if it was, I mean, I just want to know the truth. And I think I'm like a lot of you out there. I am not beholden to any philosophy or group of people that talk about a certain amount of evidence or documentation. I just want to know the truth. Well, Dr. Judy Wood, who is an engineer, came forward with a lot of information and was severely attacked on many fronts. Why? I'm not quite sure. I still don't understand that part. And I'm going to ask you now, first of all, Andrew Johnson, who's joining us from the UK, an independent researcher on 9/11. You say that there was a potential directed energy weapon utilized during 9/11. define for us what that might be. What kind of weapon might it be? And then I want you to help us understand, why is it that some of the leading 9/11 researchers and 9/11 groups are so angry at even considering that as an option? First of all, what is the potential weapon that could have been used?
Well, again, you have to try and isolate the characteristics of the weapon from the evidence. And initially, Dr. Wood had posted some interesting pictures with looking at the tops of the buildings with circular holes in, which were approximately 24 feet in diameter. And these were consistent with some type of, energy weapon technology. So you start to look at phenomena like that. One of the other key points that she picked out is to do with something called interferometry, because she's an expert in optical interference methods, which are used in stress analysis, which was her field of expertise in the material science sort of project that she was involved with. And she noticed, for example, we talked about this car with the wilted door and the rear tire, which was inflated. And she, looking at this evidence, saw that it was an interference effect where you were getting what's called constructive and destructive interference. Okay? Now, this is something which, you have to do a sort of bit of basic physics to fully sort of appreciate what it is. But if people who are listening know about an experiment called Young Slits experiment, that's done with laser light and a little slit. And if people know about things like diffraction gratings, then they will know about interference methods. And so really, when Dr. Woods had seen this in the evidence, that's when she began to realize it was something to do with interference. So studying the forensic evidence, you can then sort of isolate that characteristic of the weapon. So she then moved forward from there, really, and looked at other effects that we saw, like, as I say, we had the upside-down cars, and we had the metal turn into dust, and we also had bent beams into a horseshoe shape, and we had ongoing effects in the materials in the ground, and we had holes in particular places. We've got a list of about six or seven different characteristics in the evidence, and then eventually the connection was made to what is known as the Hutchison effect, which is indeed an interference technology. It's using a set of different types of electromagnetic and electric fields and interfering them in an area, in a region, using different types of signal generators and microwave generators. And hopefully, if John is coming on, John Hutchison, he'll be able to sort of describe that in a bit more detail than I can.
Yes, he will.
And so basically, when the evidence had been gathered that these effects were all there, and we saw this one-to-one correspondence with what's seen in the Hutchison effect, another of the main ones actually that I missed out is the weird fires. You remember that the streets of Manhattan had all this paper blowing around in them after the buildings were destroyed. Mm-hmm. And if the destruction of the towers involved heat, then this paper would have burned up. Now, whether you say it was, the heat from the jet fuel, which, of course, is nonsense, or the heat from bombs in the building, and we just had this renewed push to explain it all by nuclear explosions, which baffles me because nuclear explosions are very hot and very loud. We saw neither of those, things happening as the towers came down. We saw no bright flashes. We saw no significant amount of heat as the towers actually came down. All we saw was them going away, turning to dust. So, going back to the bombs in the building idea, that doesn't explain it. And the bombs in the building doesn't explain upside-down cars, and it doesn't explain any of these other effects. And so that's the reason why this is not the explanation for what happened. And if you've got this technology, this field interference technology, then and it did what it did, which it did because the buildings are no longer there, then why are you going to go to the trouble to wire up a building with explosives or supposedly with thermite, which, the towers were essentially made of anyway because they were made of steel and obviously other materials, but some of the steel will rust, which forms iron oxide, and the exterior of the buildings was an aluminium alloy, which is why it had that silvery-coloured cladding. That's what it was. It was an aluminium alloy. And if you go and look up the chemical formula for thermite, whatever variant you have, it's actually aluminium powder and iron oxide. So any remains of the building that were found, you wouldn't really be able to distinguish between whether it was planted thermite or whether it was actually just the remains of the building that was already there. So this is the big problem for people who are thinking it's thermite.
Okay, now we still haven't answered the question though. What kind of a directed energy weapon could this be? I mean, what do we know that exists
in the military? We don't know that it exists. This is completely classified. This is why I think this answers your other question as why there's been such a tremendous reaction to it, because they need to keep this technology covered up. Quite simply, the technology on which this weaponry is based is really very fundamental to the way that the universe works and the way that we've been conned into using all this other sort of technology, which seems, if you look at it, pretty good. But it's nothing compared to what this can do. We're talking anti-gravity technology, which is demonstrated by the people who were levitated, demonstrated by the cars that were upside down. We're talking about something where we can get energy out of nothing. We can cause materials literally to disappear in front of our eyes. You know, so maybe it can be used for, basically anything. I mean, you can use this thing for propulsion, you know, which is what these craft use that come here. I mean, that's the whole of the topic, but... Yeah, this technology is so fundamental to the way that the universe works that's why they need to keep it covered up. And this is why we have people like Stephen E. Jones involved, who has also got connections to the energy issue. And I think basically that he was involved because he knew which evidence needed to be distracted from and covered up and made to sound ridiculous so that people would just start attacking the messengers and, you know, not really pay any attention to it.
But that's quite a strong allegation to be making against Dr. Jones.
Oh, yes, it is, yeah, but it's all documented. So, you know, I've made these allegations, I've been making these allegations for the last 2 years, and because I have the evidence there to back them up, then, we can't be challenged on that. And again, you look at, you know, we all know the saying, actions speak louder than words. you know, if you look at the documents that Dr. Woods put in to NIST, which is called the Request for Correction, we're probably worth talking about that because she's the only one that's taken this to the Supreme Court. Nobody else has done that. Dr. Wood started off with an RFC, request for correction, which included all the directed energy weapons research that she'd done up to that time, which was 2007. Didn't include the Hutchinson effect stuff because that hadn't been discovered then, but it did include the directed energy weapons evidence with these, you know, toasted cars and the other effects on materials that I've described. And she put that into an RFC, and then she put in an appeal to the RFC because NIST refused her request for correction.
Just define NIST for the listeners.
Yeah, NIST is the National Institute for Standards and Technology, they produced about 10,000 pages of reports which were entitled The Collapse of the World Trade Center Towers. That was the name that they gave to these 10,000 pages of reports. Now, NIST didn't write these reports themselves. They used, I think, 22 contractors, I think it was. I think it was about that sort of number to do various things like fire safety sort of analysis and analysis of the alarm system and the analysis of the supposed collapse of the building. And one of the people that were involved, one of the group involved was Underwriters Laboratories. And what they did was they reconstructed a simulated floor of the World Trade Center, and they set it afire, and they burned it for twice as long, twice the temperature that was said to, you know, the fires that burned in the World Trade Center, twice as long, twice as hot, and the structure that they built did not fail. It did not fail, and yet they signed that off as being a valid explanation for the destruction of the towers. So that is basically science fraud, because they signed off on a report which was fraudulent. And so, you know, basically, that's what Dr. Wood was challenging. And when she did that, she included, as I say, the directed energy weapons evidence. Now, 3 weeks after she filed her initial RFC with the directed energy weapons evidence in it, there was another RFC filed by James Gourley, Stephen E. Jones, Richard Gage, and a number of other people. And if you go and download that document and look in it, you won't find the word thermite mentioned in it anywhere. And you won't find the word molten metal mentioned anywhere in that challenge to NIST. Now, it strikes me as very odd that if somebody is going around the country and saying, oh, you know, Thermite definitely did it because it explains all this evidence and we've got these films of molten metal coming out of the towers and all this, then why aren't they going to put that in what would become a legal challenge? And then why aren't they going to take that forward into a QI-TAM case, a science fraud case? They haven't done that. So this is where you can see the actions speak louder than words. In other words, the evidence that Dr. Wood has put on the table, we're so convinced that this is true, and we would put it in front of a jury, and if it was a fair and open and honest jury and the system wasn't loaded as we all know it is, we would win the case because we can prove it. And that's okay. Why this is so dangerous.
All right. I'm going to ask you then, I'm going to open up the phone lines, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Let's stay on topic with this subject today and explore how this may have happened in the fashion that he's talking about it, or perhaps maybe any evidence that you might have that says it didn't happen this way. 800-259-9231. If you disagree, you go to the front of the line. Let me just ask you to explain, when we bring on John Hutchison the next hour, why this man is so intriguing. Why is he so important to this story?
Yeah, well, I think that's a good question. I mean, what John has done, John's a very unusual person in that he's really outside the system. He's basically one of these people who works very as much at an intuitive level as well as, you know, he knows about the basics of technology. He knows how to construct various circuits and use the equipment that he's got. But he's certainly working at an intuitive level on some of this energy technology. And as I think, as I mentioned in one of the emails to one of the producers, he's really been looking to try and look at ways of extracting energy from nowhere. And one of the things that he's come up with is these crystal batteries, which can produce small voltage from what is known as the Casimir effect. And these batteries, you know, never run out. Now, the stage of development that John's got them to, the current that you can draw from these is very small. So they will only power very sort of small devices like calculators or, you know, digital clocks or that sort of thing that use a small current. So, you know, he's been trying to look at ways of bringing forward technologies which will open up this, if we can call it this zero-point field, and we can extract energy from nowhere. In other words, we can get out more energy than we put in. Now, of course, most scientists will call him, just say that he's just a charlatan because they go by these laws of thermodynamics, which supposedly say that you can never get out more energy than you put in. But the point is, if you're tapping into an energy source which isn't visible and most people don't know about, then you're not necessarily breaking any laws of physics. It's just that there's energy there which you weren't previously aware of. And this is where John ties into what Tesla was doing, because Nikola Tesla called this radiant energy. He called it radiant energy. In other words, this energy was all around us. All we needed to do was design the appropriate type of, you know, technological windmill, if you will, to extract this energy, because, you know, you can't see the wind. For example, but until you put up a windmill and you know, the sails go round, or your wind turbine or whatever, then that's when you can start extracting the energy from it. But the wind has been blowing for millions of years and we've never extracted energy from it. So it's the same type of thing that John is doing. He's kind of building sort of like a zero-point windmill, if you will. It's that type of thing that John has been working with the last 30 years. And because he likes to do experiments, he's discovered a whole set of new phenomena. And there are, you know, many documentaries have been made about his work. At least I first heard of it in about 1999 in a documentary which was made by Nick Cook of Jane's Defense Weekly, which was made for one of our mainstream TV channels over here.
Mm. Yeah, that is.
And this actually showed one of John's levitation experiments, where John levitated a 70-pound cannonball using only about 1.5 kilowatts of energy. Now, to give your listeners an example of what 1.5 kilowatts of energy is, that's the amount that's required, you know, to boil a kettle. So it's really a very small amount of energy. And John even was, he did have contacts in the Pentagon. I did look at your schedule, actually. And it described him as an investigator in the Star Wars program, and I don't think that's correct. I don't think John was involved with that.
Okay, we will definitely confirm or deny that, let him deny that. I think it's important to understand that John Hutchison is what I would have thought Tesla would have been like. Would that be kind of accurate?
I think, well, to an extent, yeah. I mean, Nikola Tesla was not, you know, probably had a different emphasis to what John
did. Okay, we've got a three-minute break. We'll be back with Andrew Johnson and take your phone calls, 800-259-9231. Welcome back to the Power Hour, 54 minutes after the hour. This is Joyce Riley, and we thank you for joining us today. My guest is Andrew Johnson. We're talking about 9/11. Did it have something else that was involved? Did it have something other in this puzzle of unknowns? Is there another story we need to be aware of? Dr. Judy Wood, mechanical engineer, and her website is drjudywood.com, drjudywood.com. Has said that there is evidence that has not been considered here. Well, Andrew Johnson feels the same way, and he's wanting us to hear that evidence today. Joining us in this next hour will be John Hutchison, which will also bring to light several things that he is aware of from his independent study. He's an independent physicist, if you will, and a researcher who has spent his life trying to answer a lot of questions that most of us have never even thought of before. I'm going to go to the callers real fast. Leave your hopefully your comments and questions will be short so we can get everybody on. Linda in Minnesota, you disagree. Go ahead, please, Linda.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
I don't disagree on the technology. I believe that Nikola Tesla had this energy, this technology. In fact, they have technology that we don't even know about. And, of course, nanothermite. I have Stephen Jones' papers. I've read them, and he does talk about the thermite. The point is that we have to look at who profited from 9/11. The Patriot Act was brought in, and we know that the elite want to control the world and depopulate the world. And I want to ask Mr. Johnson, do you believe that even if this energy comes forward, that the United Nations would allow people like me to have it free?
Yeah, well, I agree with you about the, you know, sort of New World Order, you know, motive for 9/11. I think that we can see that being played out in other areas. As regards making this energy freely available, well, with the current way that things are, clearly that's not going to happen because, as I mentioned briefly when I last spoke, this you know, the whole sort of geopolitical structure of the world is based around energy, and it's easy for people to forget that. You know, when you just take this idea of free energy and think of what it will mean, it will mean that all third world countries could have the same level of technology as we could. So,
but, you know, let me enter in here because we're going to have to keep it short. But I think that what she is saying is not exclusive of what happened, according to Dr. Judy Wood, or what she thinks happened. It's the fact that they want to use this energy when and where they want to use it, but they don't want us to have access
correct
to it. Hey, thank you very much, Linda, for the phone call. Let's go to Jim in PA. Jim, you're on the air with Andrew Johnson. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning, Joyce.
Morning.
Good morning, Andrew. Andrew, just real quick, if you could, I don't know if you will be able to comment for the listening audience, because I've done a lot of research on this also. If you could comment for the listening audience on, you know, Maxwell's electrodynamic equations that were taken by the elite, I think it was in the late 1800s, and then Bearden's work on scalar weapons. Thanks.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be talked about in 90
sure
seconds.
Sure, yes. I think what you're referring to is that Maxwell's original equations that he came up with, I think, in the late 1800s, they actually had talked about different dimensions, and then there were two other mathematicians called Gibbs and Heaviside who simplified Maxwell's equations, and then they were kind of, it was in that form that they were taken into the physics community, and then the work was continued on those versions. So there were, in other words, Maxwell's original equations were much better suited to actually explaining some of the physics which is behind, you know, the Tesla stuff and John Hutchison stuff, that they were basically simplified. So it was another, I think it was a science cover-up that took place, you know, all those years ago.
All right, we're going to come back with our next caller after this 1 minute, 10-second break. It's 58 minutes after the hour. We'll be back. 1 minute, 10-second. Don't go anywhere. I think you're going to want to hear these questions and answers. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Joyce Riley. straight up top of the hour.